Hey folks, today we're sponsored exclusively by Glazed Donuts. All right, let's start the show.
Lock the gate!
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Doing all right, how are you?
I'm fine. I got a missed call from you, according to iOS. So, some things never change.
Your Skype iOS app?
Yep.
Oh, well, I'm sure it was... At least it was a very rich notification this time that you could take action on.
Nope. It was just a big white blob, so.
Well, then it was truly a representation of me.
Aw, Dan. So are we live? Are we doing the thing?
We are now.
Yay.
I don't know why I always say the first thing I say once it's live, I say with like a radio voice, but we're already recording, so.
Okay.
So people will see past the fake radio voice because they previously heard my non-fake radio voice.
Well, I usually sometimes I cut that out when I'm editing, but usually it's like in the middle of the word you're saying, so then I was just like, oh, I'll just leave it in. It's like right in the middle of the sentence, so it doesn't make any sense.
No, it never does. No. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's our brand. It's how people know that there is true authenticity in this show.
I guess. Was anyone looking for authenticity in our show?
I don't know, but I feel that, you know, if nothing else, we have authenticity.
Yes.
We're not trying to be, I don't know, what's the name of the podcast? We're not trying to be any other podcast.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be
okay,
Mark Maron in the Flophouse.
I was about to say that's pretty broad. But yes,
this
yes.
This is NPR over here.
No, you definitely have not started this show by shouting at anyone to endorse any products. We haven't let off with a fun joke in a jingle about a movie we're going to discuss.
An anecdote about how broken of a human I am or something.
No, none of these things have happened.
Man, what was it, last week or something? Amanda was gone for like most of the day, so I just spent like last Sunday or two Sundays ago, whatever it was, just cleaning the house and listening to podcasts. And I got through so many podcasts with my inbox triage podcasting app or whatever. But I listened to a lot of Mark Maron, and yeah, he shouts a lot.
Yes,
he's staying on brand, just like we are.
What I liked is when we did our end of the year thing, which always takes up so much time, and you did the Mark Maron impersonation for that. I mean, not that we didn't have Mark Maron live
spoiler
in studio, but yeah, that was Dan. And so when you did that, you had to get into the rhythm of shouting, and sometimes you'd start to take it down, like as we would do like another take, and I'd be like, no, you have to keep shouting, and then you were just like out of breath and tired by the end of it, and all you're doing is talking to me.
I learned another Mark Maron move. The last one I listened to was him and Billy Crystal. And Billy Crystal had this very sort of even tempo about the way he was telling stories. And then I got a call from the folks at SNL. And in between every little pause that Billy Crystal had, Maron just went, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just like, if you were to cut out Billy Crystal's audio, it would just be 3 hours of Mark Maron just going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like a laugh.
He wants you to know he's engaged.
Yeah,
in,
like,
in the
it's
conversation.
One of those like unconscious tics or whatever. But he did it between like every three words of Billy Crystal, and I just could not unhear that. So it was just like bouncing back and forth and driving me insane.
Yeah,
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 yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. It's great. You gotta say it like we're both you know kind of half chuckling at an inside joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know where this story's going. Yeah. Ooh.
Barely contain myself.
Good show, though. I also caught up on all of Alec Baldwin's stuff, too, which he's a crazy person, but it's a good show.
Is he still doing that thing?
Yeah, there was a new one just popped up in my feed like yesterday, I think.
Huh. Good for him.
Yeah, Elliot Gould. That'll be a good one.
Elliot Gould, is that the... Is he a comedian or one of the Simpsons writers? I can't remember.
He was a very serious actor in the 70s and 80s, and he played Ross's dad on Friends.
Oh, that, yes, him. I think there's another Gould who I'm thinking of, so anyway, Never mind.
I'm sure there are many Goulds.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of Goulds.
So, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've had enough beating around the bush. Time to get to the real heart of this episode, which is not, you know, about a movie, because sometimes we don't do that. We buck our own trends, and this particular time we were just like, yeah, we're not going to do that. And so we're doing a little bit of a topical thing. And there have been a lot of things that have gone on recently, and one of them is the release of a certain iPhone. And I want to hear from you the same question that every single podcast that I listen to is talking about: what phone did you buy?
Is it time for some evergreen podcast punditry?
Yes, yes. So when people are listening to this in 2022 and they want to know what kind of phone you got.
So let me set the stage for you. I knew that the pre-orders were Friday, but for some reason that didn't register in my head as like Thursday late at night I needed to be paying attention. And then I saw Casey set his alarm or whatever on Twitter for 2:47 a.m. and everyone was giving him crap. And I was like, oh, that's funny. He must have to be up early for something for work. And then I was like, 45 minutes later, I go, oh, right, pre-orders are tonight. Gotcha, gotcha. So I set an alarm on my phone as well. But basically, I was at the XOXO Fest, very drunk. And I sat at a bar inside the building there at the facility, and I bought a phone, and then I started, you know, of course, doing the thing I do when I get very excited and rambling, and told Amanda about all the great features, and she's still on a six, so I made her give me her phone, and then I bought a phone for her too.
Oh, I thought you were going to do a hand-me-down situation.
No, no, no. She has a six. I don't give my phones to anybody. They stay with me. You can't have them back, Apple. Wait. I won't donate them or sell them on the internet. They're mine. They belong to me.
Wait, so you own every iPhone? Just you have them in a closet somewhere?
See, this is the problem. I didn't get the first one. I didn't get the 3GS, but I have all the other ones. And I want to buy like a first gen just to, like, you know, round out the collection. I don't need a 3GS because all it added was what, like 1080p video or something. It looked exactly the same. But yeah, there's a bag in the closet full of iPhones.
Wow.
Which is good because since I'm on a terrible carrier, I had to take out my 5S or whatever and unlock that because I'm still on contract on my 6 or whatever it was when I took my phone to Italy. So I unlocked the old one and brought that and used it as a hotspot for everyone to use. So that was helpful. But I don't get phones back. That's the thing. I don't get phones back. It's mine. Can't have this back. It's got my memories and all of my nicks and dings and stuff on it.
I had... My history is, of course, I have had far fewer devices than you have. I had the 3G as my first iPhone, and then I had the iPhone 4, and then I've had the iPhone 6, which I still have, and I'm not buying the 7. So that makes it a little less weird.
Do you still have more?
No, but see, here's the other thing. My sister asked for my iPhone 3G because I wasn't using it anymore when I went to the 4, and I was like, okay, but you know it doesn't work on Verizon because I'm on AT&T, and then she... like had it for months and then didn't set it up, and I had erased it and everything, and then apparently some carpet maintenance guy or something was inside of her apartment and like skedaddled with it, and you know, once that happens there's no way to get that back, so it's gone. And then the iPhone 4 I had, and I had it unlocked and erased and ready to go when we went to France last year. I don't know. I went to France.
And you've been to France so many times.
Well, I've been twice. But the first time I was in France was when the 4S was released. So it coincided with that release date. I did not get the 4S. But not the 4S. The 5? I think it was the 5. This last time I was in France, I brought the old 4 because it was unlocked, and I went through the whole unlock process, and I was going to put a SIM in it, but then we just ended up using the small international data package that my boyfriend had, and then we didn't end up using the iPhone 4 the entire time, and I was like, oh, so I erased this for nothing, and And then I was thinking about that. I was just like, why do I care if I erase this for nothing? Like, it's just going to go back in a drawer. And I lent it to my brother-in-law for when they went to go to Italy for their honeymoon so that they could use it as a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I had a similar feeling, I think, as well when I did the 5S, because, you know, talk about weird emotional feelings about a phone. Like, I pulled the old 5S out of the box and it's like, oh, I'm going to take this with me. And it's like, still set up with all my crap on. I'm like, well, really need to update this to the modern OS so it, like, you know, just works better and is compliant with everything. But then it's like, well, but I put it in the box, like in the state that I had it in that day, and it's a time capsule to the last time I used the 5S. And if I update it now, I'll be tarnishing the memory of when I retired the 5S and moved on to the 6. And these are the things I think about, which clearly shows that I'm a crazy person. But
yeah, that's pretty unhinged.
But, like, you know, the idea is you pull the thing out of the box, you plug it in, it still works, and it boots up, and you're like, oh, look, I used to, this is what my home screen looked like, and I had those apps, and memories. But now, you know, at least the 5S, and I think I haven't done it the 6, at least the 5S is has been updated after it was retired, so it no longer holds that state.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like
people have emotional ties to their technology is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, that's very clear. Like, I still have my old MacBook, the first one I bought in 2006, and that one, you know, the pre-unibody kind of floppy plastic kind, which looks utterly ridiculous these days, but, you know, it did its thing. And that one's still full of all the stuff, even though I had time machined it and then set up the new MacBook from that, so it's gone forwards. So if I open it up, it's like a little time capsule back into when I had last used the MacBook, which is strange because you don't realize, you think, oh, they don't really update the Mac that often, but then you open it up and you're just like, holy crap, this looks so old. Just like even like the menu bar and stuff, you're just like, this is all very strange. It's like another planet all of a sudden, because you can't figure out where anything is. And it's not as disorienting when you're upgrading as it is when you go back two or three versions ago. And then you're just like, this is a completely different UI for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I don't know why I keep it. And I also don't know why I keep my iPad 3, so I have them.
I still have my iPad 1. It's in the closet. I used to just, like, leave it on the keyboard dock, like, turned on, so I could, like, oh, let me just slide over there and pop into Safari and search for some things and use it to play music. Or, well, I guess it wouldn't play music because I don't think it had, whatever, iTunes Match or something. But I officially retired it because it was just beyond useless. But, yeah, you know, old computers that you don't erase, like, those give me anxiety. That's, like, the opposite feeling, because you boot it up and you're like, oh, my God, all my files are here. What if somebody, like, finds this and thinks that, like, I'm a moron because they found this blog post that I wrote 6 years ago and it's really terrible and there's terrible grammar and stuff in here? Or I just think, like, you know, maybe there's a file in here I forgot to migrate over or something. So I want to erase it immediately, but I also don't want to touch it. I just wanted, like, to pretend it doesn't exist and just put it in a closet somewhere.
That's confusing. So you have anxiety, someone will take it from you.
Mm-hmm. So basically, in my closet right now, I have the hard drives of the first computer I built back in, like, I don't know, 1998 or something. I took the hard drives out, and then the computer's in the garage somewhere. But the hard drives, I'm not going to format them or, like, throw them away or anything. They're just going to stay in there, locked up, privately.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, whatever you want, you do you. So back to the iPhone 7.
Yeah, the moral of the story is I bought a 128 gigabyte iPhone 7, regular human-sized hand size, jet black.
Now, I forget. Do you go caseless?
Of course I go caseless.
Okay. So that explains why you would like the jet black, I guess, then.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna look beautiful.
So whatever they do to the outsides of these phones never fazes me because I just put it inside of a case every time.
Yeah.
But my one mandatory requirement is that the front of the iPhone always be black.
See, and that's my thing too. And I would go for something. Well, previously I've said I would go like rose gold or something just to break up the space gray monotony, because, you know, I've had three space gray phones now, and it's boring. I'm done with it. But, you know, it's got to have a black front. And the phone that I made Amanda buy was the matte black, same as mine, because she's looking for something different. She's had a silver phone for, I don't know, the past all of her phones or whatever, except for the 4 series. She might want to return that for something with a white front because, I don't know, it, you know, it's the whole want something new, something different, but she also puts it in a case, and then it's just going to be a case with a black front, and she's worried it'll be too masculine, so she might go for a rose gold.
Hmm.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, jet black. I have opinions. She has fewer opinions. She wants a new phone. She's going to get a new phone, but jet black, man. It's where it's at.
Well, that's very nice of you to do that because, you know, you're being a very supportive person.
Being supportive by getting drunk and saying your phone's too old, you need a new phone.
Yeah. No. We talked to Jason about it, about whether or not he was going to upgrade, and we both kind of came down on the nah side of things. We'll see where next year goes. I'm assuming that whatever it is next year will entice me further than this year's has, but whatevs. That's not like a big major strike against it, and I don't think like the world is revolting against the device or anything. But you know, I can definitely see a reason for upgrading and a reason for not upgrading, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, there's some cool new stuff. There's some, you know, the annoying stuff. I think literally everyone has covered this to death. I mean, you guys had some good arguments, and well, not arguments, discussions on helpful suggestions where you both just agreed with each other for an hour or so.
Well, not about everything, because I have opinions about the Bluetooth W1 shenanigans, you know? Yeah.
I think since I've waited on this very briefly with other people on the internet and not like on the show, the shorter version of mine is I typically stick with just ear pods. I'll be fine with the Lightning ear pods. I want the ear pods because I think it'll be great. It'll be fun. It'll be a nice way to use the thing, and then you can do your charging or whatever. Yeah, it'll be a little bit of a hassle with the floss case or whatever. But the biggest problem is when it comes time to buy my next pair of large headphones, you know, because I use a big pair of Sennheiser. Oh, God, at this point, they're incredibly old HD 280s. For using on my Mac and when I'm on an airplane to drown out all of the screaming babies and listen to music at the same time or listen to podcasts or whatever. What am I going to buy next time? Because I want it to work with phone and laptop and everything else in the entire world, like cameras and stuff like that. So I'm going to have to make a decision based on the expensive headphones to the lowest common denominator, which is going to be my phone. So that means I'm going to have to buy a Bluetooth headset. And then like, how is that going to work for... I'm sure it'll be fine on a laptop, but then what do I got to do when I'm, you know, trying to monitor a camera or something? Like, I can't do it there, so I got to keep the old Sennheisers around. Like, that's the problem. Like, the phone in its own little world by itself will be fine. The headphones with the Mac and the phone will theoretically be fine at some point, but there is still the larger ecosystem of things that one listens to with headphones. And the forced ahead of the curvedness, I believe, as you guys sort of described it, that Apple is imposing on itself of using Bluetooth is not necessarily going to proliferate to all of the other hardware devices in the world and going to be a little bit of an annoyance for a while. And by a while, I mean like 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah, it depends. But I like I said before in that other thing that nobody needs to go listen to a short version. I'm fine with Bluetooth. I just think that it creates a really weird disruption in the market for a lot of people who might be shopping for different other things because now there's a much more limited category. And you know, oh, there's so many Bluetooth headphones. And it's like, yeah, but a lot of them aren't that good, especially in the cheaper end of the spectrum. But you can get pretty decent wired cheap ones. And it's like, oh, well, you get an adapter in the box. And it's like, yeah, but then you got to carry around little tiny white piece of plastic. Oh, but they're so cheap. Yeah, but they kind of cost what it would cost for basically the cost of headphones, or you know, one third of the cost of like decent headphones. So it's a thing. So I don't care.
I think the biggest disappointment that sort of is swirling around a lot of these same issues for people is I'm really kind of sad that we're not on inductive charging yet, or you know, some sort of magnetic charging for the phone. We got it for the watch. We ostensibly have it for our laptops. Why are we still plugging stuff into our phones to charge them? Like, that seems unnecessary, and that could get us around this whole lightning headphones and charging at the same time nonsense. I mean, of course, you know, it would probably slip off all the damn time if you're trying to like charge on an airplane and listen to music or something. But I don't know why we're still plugging stuff into our iPhones to charge them. The technology's there. Get on with it, guys.
Yeah, I'm unclear on that requirement. I know that I believe wireless charging cannot charge as fast as wired charging, but it'd still be a nice to have in certain situations. And there are certainly cases that you can get for iPhones that sort of add that functionality. I don't really trust it, though. very skeptical of it. Like Jason's car has it inside of the armrest.
I've seen those where it's got like a little rubber pad that says like, put your phone here.
Yeah, only it works like five phones or something. I don't, or with the special case that you can also buy from the people who make that thing. But it's just like, I just don't trust it enough to use that necessarily.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing that it's another one of these like jumps forward in just basic day-to-day infrastructure that would make a huge difference for a lot of us. And I think it would help alleviate some of these issues. Maybe it'll be there next year and everyone will be like, oh, I guess I'm okay with my lightning headphones now because I can use inductive charging or something. And that, you know, they could even do something that, you know, when the watch came out, everyone was saying like, why isn't that little round magnetic bit just like an adapter that you connect to a regular old lightning cable and charge that way instead of like being actually hard-coded into the thing. But like if they had something that you just stick on the end of your old lightning cables, and it turns it into inductive that you could just click onto your iPhone, or you could pop it off and plug directly in and charge wired, like that would be a good thing that they could do. And it, you know, that let's I want that. I don't know why we're still like not there. You know, they're, I don't want to be all like competitors doing it first, but competitors have been doing it for a little while now, and I don't know how well it works aside from seeing those terrible commercials with Danny Glover always talking about his Samsung phone charging with the, you know, the inductive charger. But I want that. I want that more than I want like my headphones gone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't anticipate that being your primary motivator for passion. But
it's not. It's really hot in here, so.
Oh, okay.
Passion is coming out of everywhere.
Let's just pull back to one specific area of the phone. Now, you got the regular old 7 from normal size hands, which I also would have bought if I were to select from the current lineup. but I was curious because a lot of people might be like, oh, hey, Dan, you like fancy cameras, don't you? And doesn't the Plus have the fancy camera? Like, what? Why wouldn't you want the fanciest camera you could possibly get? So Dan, what's wrong with you?
Defend my position.
Yeah.
First of all, the fanciest camera on a cell phone is never going to be a fancy camera. It's nice and all of that or whatever. But, you know, I do zoom from time to time. I don't know that I really zoom that much. And it is annoying to me that, like, generally speaking, cell phone lenses are so wide angle that like when you fire it up, you're like, oh, I shouldn't even take this photo unless I can walk 15 steps closer because it's not going to turn out. It's going to look terrible. Or you zoom in digitally or crop. But I just don't care. Like I don't use my phone to take like portrait style photos. I use it to capture a moment. So like when someone at an XOXO conference is drunk and doing star jumps in the middle of a field, I pull my phone out and just flip it up real quick with the camera out to try and capture that. And then I get yelled at and put it away immediately. But
wait, what's a star jump?
A star jump that we learned at XOXO is like a, it's kind of like a jumping jack, but you start with your hands and legs down and you jump and then you starfish out and then you close your hands and legs before you land. So you jump, do a star, close, and land.
For athletic reasons or?
It wasn't discussed what the reasons for the star jump were, but some people did some star jumps.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, one of the other things though about the different lenses, and do you, by the way, object to the term telephoto being used for what is it, effective effectively a 56 millimeter?
I mean, technically anything over 50 is telephoto, but it's not telephoto. It's just it's a 50.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, when I'm walking around, when I'm going to be dumb hippy-dippy photographer guy, just, like, walk around downtown and, like, take pictures of people when they're not looking, or, like, artsy photos of, you know, dogs riding on the light rail or something. Like, I just walk around with a 50 mil lens because that's just, like, your average nice-sized lens for a full-frame camera. I wouldn't call 50 telephoto. It's the beginnings of getting to a portraiture style lens. Like, typically 85 is where people start to refer to lenses as portrait. But, you know, it's fine. It's nice to have a longer lens on the phone. You wouldn't want that to be your only lens. And it's nice that they have these two options. I just don't care enough to, like, put this giant piece of metal and glass in my pocket and be uncomfortable all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any particular feelings about the sort of fusion aspects of the photo system using...
Oh, the noise reduction stuff with using two lenses and sensors and all that?
Yeah, like pulling some of the data from one lens, which might have a slightly better part of that image?
No. I 'cause if I'm shooting a wide angle shot, the other sensor is going to use basically a center cropped portion to sort of like compare and contrast the two. So you're not doing like a direct, what we would call like a difference, you know, between two frames that are identical to remove the noise, which would be the only thing different between the two images, because you don't have a full frame shot of the two of them. If you're on the longer lens, then you have both sections, but one is zoomed out. So one's going to be inherently noisier because it's a wider angle. So, I mean, I'm sure they'll be marginally cleaner, but I don't think, like, it's not like the noise reduction in the lenses is that bad to start with, that it's like, oh, thank God our savior is here to have dual sensors doing fusion to reduce additional noise. Like, if they were identical sensors with identical lenses firing at the exact same time, like synchro locked perfectly down to the millisecond, you would be able to do some really interesting stuff with removing almost entirely all of the noise without doing any sort of, like, you know, software noise reduction. But that's not what this is. It's like a hybrid kind of guessing game. So, like, I'm assuming, like, if you get a weird lens flare in a portion of it, like, it'll help maybe correct some of that stuff out. But this isn't going to be like in camera noise reduction the way people think it's going to be in camera noise reduction.
I haven't really heard people bantying about as noise reduction as much as for clarity and sharpness.
Well, I mean, that's basically what it is. You take out the noise, you have in a sharper image, ostensibly.
Well, no, not. But you can also get a sharper image through the lens material and the speed of the lens. Not just you can, like, if you were to use certain film stocks, you might have like giant film grain, but you used very fast lenses or something. You know, that sort of thing. Like, you might have a sharp image technically in a certain level, but you might have a grainy image product still,
right?
So,
well, if it's taking the longer lens photo and sticking it into the center of the wide photo and sort of like blending the seams a little bit, that would give you a potentially sharper image in the center and then the boring old wide angle around the sides, which I think would be a terrible implementation for them because it would look just, people would be able to tell. It would look weird.
No. Well, but it's not doing that. Because, yeah, you would have just like a straight up border all the way around it. But
just nice soft edge.
Just a big rectangular soft mat around it.
Yeah, nice vignetted edge. That'd
yeah.
be great.
From what I was seeing, it's stuff like a blob of a pattern. You know, like some leaves of a tree from like Matthew Panzerino's review for TechCrunch. It's not some inorganic geometric shape of the center crop, you know, whole entire other sensor. And there's also, you know, downsampling from cropping that and then scaling it down and then putting it inside of the other thing. When you're squeezing more info into a smaller area, then you can also get some more info and detail that way as well. Depending on how you filter it, but whatevs. The main point is, I think I've seen some people object to this sort of thing because it's like, well, it's not really real, you know, man. It's not real photography.
Those people need to stop talking immediately. Like, it has nothing to do with realism. My only concern or sort of baseline objection to it would be, I don't know how well they could successfully use both of these sensors together to create whatever it is they're trying to do. I mean, you can get some benefits of having both of them, but it's not going to be as dramatic a benefit as if they were identical or if you had some, I don't know, additional reference footage from another angle or something. But saying that it's not real, like, that's just stupid. I think it's pretty clear that none of this is real. Like, this... it's making a pretty picture. It's not making a real picture. Like, that's not the point.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't know what it is about these cameras. Whenever Apple refreshes these and talks about how great they are, everybody seems to want to retreat and go back to a mode of, no, they're not really that great. They're not as good as my SLR. It's like, I have an SLR too. A DSLR too. Like, it's good, but you know what's in my pocket? My iPhone. You know what's not in my pocket? My DSLR. So, I think you know, the things that people use for sharing photos, it's like, so this is going to wind up on Instagram anyways. What do you care? Do you think Instagram in some way represents reality? Because it does not. You can spend 2 seconds scrolling through Instagram and you're like, oh, look, everything here has been edited and retouched and cropped and zoomed manipulated 6 ways to Sunday. Like, it's not about reality. So I don't know why people get so hung up on that. And there are things like features like HDR, which has been around for many iterations of the iPhone, where...
Use it to death as often as I can.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, absolutely. I shoot HDR photos all the time.
Oh, well, sometimes I turn it off because I don't like the extra... Sometimes I know that it's going to take a bad photo, so I just don't. Always.
Oh, yeah, no, I leave it off all the time, except in specific instances where I go, oh, this is going to be an HDR image for sure.
Yeah, because that's taking two different photos with different exposures and then combining them and then giving you one product. And then it also spits out one of the other images onto the reel, and you're just like, what?
And you can tell it not to do that, but like, if you've ever run into the instance where you like take an HDR image where it's like sort of low light and then you get like a blur because the camera moved between the first and second exposures.
Yeah.
That is unrecoverable. So you got to have that other one sitting there just in case.
Yeah. And I agree with that. It's just sometimes it's a little bulky to leave on all the time, but you know, there's nothing inherently philosophically wrong with using that feature. And
that feature came out first on the Red camera called HDRX. It's literally exactly the same things. Takes two exposures. You can slide in between them. You can post-process it later and sort of combine the two of them. It's a huge pain in the butt. And any like temporal offset with like the camera moving in between exposures makes it look terrible. And it's a really, really annoying feature to use, but you can turn it off or on or whatever. But like, that's a thing we do.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to use it for video personally.
No, it doesn't work out very well.
No, I think photos is right where it needs to be, because you know, people want to hold still for the photo. You know, take the shot. That's it. You know, not a lot of, hopefully not a lot of fast moving things.
I mean, generally speaking, it's like my hand shaking or something that ruins the HDR, not the people moving.
Yeah, but then there's also stuff like, you know, the local tone mapping, which was in, I think, the 6S. It might have shipped in the 6, but I think it was the 6S. And that's like regions of the image might be adjusted to better improve it. And that's just the computer on the thing deciding to do that for you. It has nothing to do with reality again. Yeah. But, you know, I think a lot of times people get really upset when they see a computer being involved in a certain way and combining images, and there's like, no, unnatural. And it's like,
well, I hate to break it to you guys, yeah, there's a computer in every DSLR and there's a computer control in every display that you're looking at those images on. But
yeah, I don't think people look at like the raw, like now that they added the feature to look at raw photos,
DNG, I don't know that we want to call that raw.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that that's not really, really the like very baseline level of what your camera is capturing. Like that is you're still looking at something that has been processed. Mm-hmm. You are just capable of adjusting the processing, and there's more data to sift through that's been retained. But the, you know, we could get down to debayering.
I wasn't gonna say it. Everybody take a shot.
But you know, and most people don't see that phase of it and wouldn't want to either. Like, it has no practical purpose for you to get involved in those sorts of things.
No, the first time I ever shot with a high speed Phantom camera, and I looked at the files, I'm like, oh, these files that come out of this camera are not debayered. That's pain in the butt. I have to debayer them, and then I can do all of my processing, and I get to pick which kind of debayer. Oh, which debayer do I want? I have no idea. Anyway, but like the two lenses thing on the Plus would be nice for those times where you're like in a beautiful setting, or you got a thing in front of you, and you really want to take like an awesome like portraiture style, like, you know, it's gonna get like at least 60 likes on Instagram style photo. And, you know, beautiful color. You can even do the faux depth of field thing on it. It's gonna be really nice most of the time. You know, you're going to get a lot of views on that. People are going to enjoy it. They're going to say like, wow, what camera did you take this with? But that is absolutely positively not even remotely worth the effort of lugging around that giant phone. Because as much as I'm sure people want to say it is a better phone, and I agree, it's probably a better phone for processing power and battery and all that stuff. Like, it is just, it is untenable for me to try and lug that thing around. Like, I'm used to at this point the 6 form factor. I think it's laughable to try and go back to the other ones. Like, it probably feels really weird. I should try it one of these times when I go through my catalog in my closet of all of my various phones and caress them.
Sift through that bag.
Yeah, but like, you know, I can't do it. Like, partly because my hand is just not big enough to like hit a button without like firing the phone out of my hand onto the table or whatever it is. But like, it's just like, it's not comfortable. I don't enjoy using it.
No, I'm on the same page with you on this one. It is entirely about the physical dimensions of that screen, since it is the way you manipulate the device.
Like, I've gone as far as buying one of those stupid, what's the thing that you stick on the phone to make a different lens? You know, this,
what was it called? The Glyph?
Holo Clip.
Oh, okay. That one too.
The Glyph is the little plastic doodad that holds it from Studio Neat, which I have one of those, and I pre-ordered the new one on their little Kickstarter. I'm super excited about that. But I got an Holo Clip. It has like 3 lenses built in and like different permutations. You can flip it around and unscrew a thing or whatever. I never carried that around, never used it. It's a pain in the butt. Like, I mean, I would love more lens options, or like, you know, actual optical adjustments to your camera, whether it's zoom in, zoom out, whatever. But it's just not worth the hassle. It really isn't.
No, I agree with you.
Because, you know, honestly, what do we do with our phones most of the time anyway? We just make stupid jokes on Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, I took a photo of a tire on my way to the gym, and I sent it to you, and I said, look, it's a costume from the future.
But that tire would have looked really good with some narrow depth of field.
Yeah, it would have been stunning. Now,
do we know what aperture that the Foca is simulating?
I don't know if they actually tried to pick any specific one to simulate. They certainly, I don't think, have said anything about that. I know that it's a 1.8 in one lens and a 2.2 in the other lens, and that they're blurring the crap out of it. But I have no idea what their goal for that is.
And as far as we're aware, the computer does all the picking about what's in focus and what's out of focus, and we have no input on that, correct?
Well, I mean, that's just like, it's just like when you take a photo now, you tap on the region that you want to be in focus.
Right, but yeah. Since this is like fake, they could give us a slider that says like, well, make it a little bit deeper depth of field, or make it a little less blurry in the background. Like, those options are potentially there.
Oh, yeah. Well, since it's fabricated for the whole background area, like, they could do whatever they want with it. But
yeah, I'm just like, if it's not just a picture of a dude with the sky and like a bridge behind him, like, and there's like people 3 feet behind him, do we get to pick like which people behind him are sort of in focus and which are out, or like what?
Yeah, well, see, the other thing is apparently there are nine layers to this depth of field or something, like the depth map. Like, basically has 9 steps in it.
But I was thinking, I love how everyone gets wowed when they see a depth map. And
God.
I don't know about you, but I see it and I go, oh, God. Yeah. Depth maps are like the least accurate, most painful thing in the world to possibly use, because they are never as refined or nice looking as you would want them to be.
No. And if anyone doubts us, you can go ahead and download all kinds of free software and make your own ZDEP maps, and you'll just be like, wow, this is garbage. And like for feature films, I have used software that records a normalized depth from 0 to 1. I've used different software that uses actual distance recorded to pixel values. So like if something's 10 feet from the camera, there's a pixel value of 10. I'm sorry, not 10 feet. It would all be in centimeters, whatever. The point is, it records that value is just a really high value, and you just get these astronomically huge files. And if you try to do something and like save it as like a half float file, it'll chop it all off, and then you'll get like all kinds of crap in like little tiny hair follicles that are supposed to have like little tiny, tiny, little imperceptible amounts of change in depth. And it's just like you couldn't even fathom the level of detail that you need in a ZDepth map for it to do something like blur correctly from one distance to another.
Oh, and by the way, Joe, for the audience, in those cameras that are purpose-built to record ZDepth maps, how far apart are the lenses typically?
I don't know, because I have never worked on a show that's used that.
They're usually on either side of the map box, so let's call it 16 inches apart.
Yeah.
In order to actually survey the scene from two different perspectives and actually get distance.
Well, and there's also still other problems with using optical data for generating depth that I am 97% sure Apple has not solved, because nobody else has. But, you know, they could surprise everyone. But, you know, you look at something like Nuke's own tools for this, you know, high-end compositing software. They have a depth map generator. That's all doing it like temporally based on like motion vectors and stuff. But there's another thing that they have called Ocula, which is basically like a fancy plugin that does 3D stereo stuff. And you can take two images and get vectors over time. And you can also just get the vectors between both eyes. And then you can do all kinds of crazy stuff, like generate something that is at an in-between depth, a new image that is in between the left and the right source images. You can generate a depth map just from the data from the left and right eyes. But all kinds of stuff trips it up. Grain trips it up. Noise trips it up. If the lenses aren't exactly aligned, of course, they're going to be exactly aligned inside your camera unless you bend it. But then you got stuff like flares in one that's not in the other, slight discolorations. If somebody smudges one lens and not the other lens, well, you know, good luck with that. And you got even like weird sort of like color shifts as the light travels into the lens slightly differently from how it traveled into the other one. Usually it's worse on things where they use like a mirror in the rig.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you get the polarized, plus you get the green tint, plus you get the exposure difference. Like, it's all a disaster. But
yeah, but the point is, there are a lot of things that cause problems for trying to determine depth from two source images. And there's even more problems. Even if all of those things that I just said were totally fine, you have stuff like reflections, transparency with reflections that cause all kinds of problems. Like, in Apple's demo image, there is a guy who is very close to the camera and a building that is very far away. The building is reflective, but it's very, very far away. If that was a guy standing in front of a shop window and it was a glass shop window with reflections from the street, what do you imagine would happen as you looked through that into the shop?
Are you asking me, or are you like, you just, this is a hypothetical?
Well, I'm asking you as a hypothetical. Like, how do you think...
Where would it draw the lines for the faux depth of field, or like, what would the phone just even register?
Yeah, like, how do you separate reflections on the glass versus what is inside of the storefront that you're looking inside of?
Yeah, I mean, mathematically, what it should look like is that the reflections are... Well, the reflections should be in focus, but the reflections will be treated like they are and equidistant on the other side of the glass as if there was another street on the other side of the window, and they will likely be blurred out.
Yeah, well, but not to the level of the shop.
No, probably not.
Yeah, and so if there was the reflection of the guy standing in front of that glass, so he's reflecting into the glass, he would mm-hmm. be sharp as he is to the camera. But the street would be out of focus. The interior of the shop would be even more out of focus.
So basically, I'm curious how this is going to fail, because there are going to be a lot of instances, and you know, it's not the phone's fault, it's just nature's fault. There's going to be a lot of instances where the fake depth of field fails, and I'd be curious to see what it does when it does fail. Like, do we know if this is an option that you can turn on or off, like after the shot? Like, if you shoot it and your depth of field is like someone's face is half blurred and the other half is like in, can you like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to do that, turn that back off so I can have my regular image, or is it baked in? And if it's not baked in, like, are people just going to stop using it because in the real world, it's going to fall on its face a lot, and then, you know, that's just the way it's going to go.
Well, I don't know for that mode, because they didn't really go into it, and they haven't given it to anybody as a demo, and they haven't like done it live in front of an audience, because what they were showing was just things that they had shot already. So,
I guess if anything, they could do it like HDR and shoot the same image, one with fake depth of field and one without.
Yeah, but the thing is that it's also a special mode you need to swipe over into. So just like with pano mode, so you have to swipe over into using it. So it's not like you're going to be using it all the time. But the question that I have is, like, if it falls apart for the reasons that I think it's going to fall apart for, and that is not having a good enough depth map to be reliable and to produce images that are not gross. And what I mean is, like, I don't care if it's correct depth of field, because people do all kinds of crap with like tilt shift filters and stuff like that. You do whatever you want.
You even mentioned in Unhelpful Suggestions, and I'll come clean too. Like, I've made things look like they were shot at f1.4 in post when they were absolutely not. Like, I've done that a lot, and it's a thing that happens, so it's okay.
Yeah, no, nobody's gonna arrest you, it's fine. But the and I do it, you know, for my job, for compositing things, because you have to fake depth of field on things that you're inserting. If you're inserting a set extension and it needs to look like the real set that was there, then it needs to be as out of focus as that set is. And then it is. And then nobody says anything because they don't notice that there wasn't an entire set back there. And we all go on with our days. And no one gets any accolades for that. But with something like the phone, like, if it just makes an image that does not look good, then I don't see people using it very often. But I don't have it, so I don't know what it's going to be like, and only time will tell. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of cases where this falls flat on its face. I'm also curious whether or not they're going to warn people about the conditions under which it will fall flat on its face.
Well, I was just thinking, they need to be able to do it in real time so you can preview the effect before you fire. That's going to be the only way it's not going to make people super angry. Like, if you flip over into that mode and you can preview the computer doing the fake depth of field, you'll be like, okay, this shot doesn't work, I'll go back to regular photo. But if you have to shoot and then wait for it to process, you'll be like, no, this is pain.
Phil Schiller said it's live.
Okay, good. Then, like, that's the only way people are going to be able to tell. It's like, before you shoot, like, oh, for some reason, this is falling flat on its face, I'm not going to shoot this.
Also, he said something that was technically inaccurate with, like, oh, it's the first camera that lets you see live depth of field. And it's like,
Were those literally the words he used?
Yeah, because it's like, I believe they were along those lines. It's not that big of a deal, but
how about every camera that's ever existed?
Yeah, so poor guy. But it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother you. Like, whatever it looks like, it's fine if it's phony baloney, as long as it looks decent. I just have questions about how decent it will wind up looking, because I think that's probably a large part about why it hasn't shipped. But it's curious to see them tie themselves to shipping this, because they might not ever get it looking that good.
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of losing everyone, if we haven't lost them already, by dipping back into visual effects for just a minute, like
I think everybody left like 20 minutes ago.
That's totally fine. the difference, like the actual, what do we call it when it's lenses? Interaxial distance between the two lenses on the back of this phone, they're so close together that the margin for error in determining a depth map from those two lenses is gigantic. Like the further apart the lenses are, and if they're a known distance, and especially if they're on the same camera mechanism that is linked together, the better off it's going to be at saying like, okay, I know how far apart I am and I see where these things are. I can see the dramatic differences at these different distances and I can calculate a depth map from here. But when they're that close together, the differences are going to be so minimal, and it's this little tiny, sure, it's a nice lens, but it's a really tiny lens and a tiny sensor. So there's not that much detail to start with. I just don't see it pulling any sort of really accurate depth map on any regular basis at all. Like, I just don't see it because the lenses are too small. They're too close together. The sensors are too small. Like, I'm sure mathematically, yes, all things being equal, it is possible to pull a great depth map from something that is that close together and used in this way. But that's assuming that you don't live in the real world, and we do. And it's like, it's going to fall down very, very often. If they had put the second, like the 2x lens on the opposite corner of the phone, like on the top left instead of top right or whatever, it would create better depth maps. It would look better, but that would look really ridiculous. It would look like the stupid Fire phone.
Well, also it would be very hard for people to hold that without covering one or both of the sensors.
Right. I mean, there are totally reasons why you wouldn't do that for users, but like that would help it create this faux depth of field effect more reliably and accurately, but they didn't do that.
No, and on top of that, there is the added wrinkle that they're not the same lenses. They're not the same sensors. They are supposedly, according to Phil Schiller, like the same sensors to some degree, but you know, one of them is optically stabilized by a special mount, and the other one is not.
At that point, it doesn't matter. Like, if you got the same sensors, great, fine. You put different lenses on them, doesn't matter if they're the same sensor anymore. In fact, you'd be better off making two different sensors if the lenses are going to be different, so that they can talk to each other better if it's specifically for this feature. But of course, there are other features that the phone needs to use in this zooming method. So it's just like, it's interesting that they're going for this. It's a nice feature. I don't think it's going to work all that well at all. But, you know, again, I would love to play with it and try it out and see how it works. I don't think it's going to be the feature everyone is thinking it's going to be. And I just hope people don't feel cheated for buying the bigger phone specifically for that feature, especially because it's not there yet. But, you know, also because I just don't think it's going to work that well.
Yeah, I am curious about that too, because promising this and also promising how great it's going to be and then not shipping it because it isn't ready, and not like a we need to produce X number of these prototype units in a the code is not done yet kind of a way, like that is a little troubling because it could theoretically disappoint a lot of people. Now, I don't know if it's, you know, I'm sure someone's going to file some class action lawsuit and be like, it's not like my DSLR. Because that always happens. That literally always happens. But, it's one of those things that would make me hesitant to purchase something if I knew that a feature wasn't ready to be shipped yet but would be coming. Is like, well, I don't know if it's going to work right, though. So,
yeah,
just wait.
You know what we can get excited about is that the wide-angle lens is now an f1.8, which is pretty great. That's, I don't know, it's almost a full stop brighter than the lens before, so that's going to be great for low light and noise and all that stuff. People can be excited about the 2x optical zoom. That'll be nice for people. And, you know, the rest of the phone. Like, there's other cool stuff there. But I just hope people aren't getting their hopes super high for this faked up the field thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and another good thing, though, is that with the regular size normal person 7, there's finally optical image stabilization for that model, which didn't previously have it. So you'll have that to look forward to. So when your hands are shaking,
It's so cold outside.
It's just freezing, freezing in Arizona.
I've never personally ever seen any like side-by-side comparison that really convinced me that optical image stabilization on a cell phone lens was really that important. But sure, it's there. Great. I'm happy about it.
Yeah, I have no idea the minute, tiny little motions that it's doing inside of there, but I'm sure it does something. Otherwise, they wouldn't bother with it.
Micro vibrations, just like the micro-abrasions that will be all over it.
Well, you know, you get those micro vibrations, the ones that make you scream and shout. So that concludes the stuff and the things.
iPhones.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. By the way, you know, a lot of people complained about the process and the wait times and the stuff and the limited things.
Hey, are you going to say works fine for me?
No, I'm just going to say it doesn't work fine for literally any instance other than buying it outright full price. That's the only way that you can reliably get something fast for launch day. And it's really annoying because, you know, all of the subsidized rates are basically gone in favor of this monthly thing, which I just find gross. And I don't want my monthly bill to be any friggin' larger. I don't need yet another eel, to use Roderick parlance, another $30 a month going out the door to something. Just like, I'll take the hit now and just give me my phone and get on with it. It kind of sucks that, like, the only way to reliably get a phone on launch day is to spend between $700 and $1,000.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, you care about watches or any of the other junk?
Bleep no. Yeah, it does nothing for me. It still does nothing for me. I'm happy for people who are happy, although I get the impression that any previous watch owner is not necessarily champing at the bit to upgrade. Are you going for it?
No.
Yeah. See, didn't think so.
I don't do a lot of swimming and or running without my phone. I mean, theoretically I could, but
it wasn't holding you back before.
No. I mean, if I could pair my AirPods like directly to the watch and then like go on a run and listen to music from the watch and stuff, that would be cool. I just don't see myself leaving my phone at home until it has cellular, but whatever.
Yeah. There is that. Now, one last thing, since we've been talking about XOXO this entire time, is that we had talked about donuts, because Portland is apparently infamous for several donut places, and I believe you've tried several establishments and you have opinions. So I wanted to consult with you on it, because I've never been to Portland.
Yeah, you would hate it, first of all.
Oh, good.
It's a lot dirtier than I remember. Like, you know, San Francisco dirty? It's like that, but there aren't the people actively running around cleaning it up.
There are people actively running around cleaning up San Francisco?
Yeah, but the rate at which it is being re-soiled is just too great.
Oh. Interesting.
Anyway, we went to two donut places. We went to Voodoo, which is the one that you have to go to, which I have been to before. It turns out it was 5 years ago. I thought it was a lot longer ago, but it was only 5 years ago. The line was around the building, and they have like little stanchions with like ropes and stuff or whatever saying stand here, and they've got like an outside seating area specifically for them, for all of the people who buy their donuts and want to eat them immediately and take photos and put them on Instagram. So it's gotten very, very touristy there. And there are, of course, people trying to sell you newspapers or something. I don't know. But we bought four there just to try some variety. And, you know, they look smaller in the case. I felt like I wanted to die after eating 3.5 donuts.
Oh my God.
After sharing 3.5 donuts, I should say.
Oh, okay. That's better.
Yeah. They were good. I don't think they were, well, you know, one or two of them weren't quite as fresh as I had hoped. I guess they weren't as popular with the other folks as they were with us. But
meaning they were a little, like, mushy or stale or...
Little stale. One of them had, and again, this is, I let her pick this one because I had no intention of eating it in the first place. One of them had, was it Fruit Loops on them? The cereal?
Oh, gross.
Yeah, it's very gross. I hate all of those fruity cereals, but I took one bite and the Fruit Loops were like, I don't know, when you leave a partially closed bag of cereal in your cabinet for 3 months stale. I don't know what they did to accelerate the staleness process, or whether they just buy their Fruit Loops in bulk like once a year, but they were not good. Which is fine, though. We had like a Homer Simpson donut, which was strawberry, because the pink which was really good. They have one that is a voodoo doll donut that has like a pretzel in its mouth, like it's smoking a cigar or whatever, and it's jelly filled. That was okay. I'm not a huge fan of jelly filled. And then there was the maple bacon log one that has the two strips of bacon and the maple frosting on it. That's my fave. Big fan of maple donuts personally. And then you got the stupid Fruit Loops one or whatever.
Yeah. And then you also tried Blue Star. And I haven't been to Portland, but they have a Blue Star that opened on Abbot Kinney. And I've tried it, and I found it to be highly overrated. But, you know, that might just be my L.A. provincial mentality.
No, we went to Blue Star as well. It was fine. They trend more towards like, oh, these are just good donuts. They're not gimmicky, covered with like silly frosting and goofy things. They're just tasty flavors or whatever. And I think we got just like, it's called like the OG. It's like just like a regular frosted donut, but it's supposed to have like with notes of horchata flavor or something. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It just tastes like a regular donut. It was a brioche donut though. So it was a little spongier than Voodoo. And the inside of Blue Star, I mean, it looks like a blue bottle coffee or something. Like it's super like hipstery, kind of like minimalist kind of thing going on. And the kid behind the register was just like super not in the mood to be working at all, like ever. But the donut was fine. They only have like six there, where Voodoo has like, I don't know, like 70 different donuts you can pick from. And the place inside looks like a hoarder has run it for 50 years or something. So it's, you know, it's kind of like a kitschy, weird little place to be. And it's kind of a fun experience. Blue Star was just like, here's your donut. Get out of my face. I don't want to talk to you. And of course, they sold like Stumptown cold brew in a bottle, which, you know, you can buy on every corner in Portland. But it was fine. It was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was not an experience. It was a donut.
Yeah.
I appreciate a donut, but sometimes I appreciate an experience more.
Okay. Duly noted. I the time I had gone to Blue Star, and there continues to be an enormous line at all hours of the day for Blue Star donuts, and I don't know why.
Oh, there was no line at the one in Portland. I should stipulate that.
Oh, no, there's a huge line at the one on Abbot Kinney. I can't fathom the reason for it. It's also significantly more expensive than other donuts, and I find them to be okay, but just okay, so I don't go back there. I mean, I would rather go to Randy's Donuts or Primo's or many other places that are just more accessible.
Yeah, they trend towards like you guys have Krispy Kremes, the like the fluffier kind, like the ones that are like almost more air.
Yeah, the those are called raised donuts. Because they have a yeast stuff that fluffs them up.
Raised in a pasture, farm to table donuts.
Yes, exactly, cage free. No, but the other kind, there's, you know, cake donuts, which are the dense ones that are cake-like. It's pretty obvious. And they don't puff up a bunch when you pop them in the oil. And then there's, of course, the old fashions, which are the kind made with either sour cream or buttermilk, and they have a little bit of a tang to them, and they also get all craggly.
Yeah, I do like those from time to time.
Yeah, and so and your filled ones tend to be the raised donuts, because they usually have a lot of air in them, so you can easily make space for fillings. When I was a kid, I used to always go for the powdered blueberry filled. I hated raspberry.
Oh my god!
I hated raspberry because raspberry had seeds, and I hated the seeds.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
but powdered? Come on, powdered.
I liked powdered. As an adult, I started to realize, you know, powder goes everywhere. And it's kind of a mess.
Like into your lungs for one. Yeah.
It's basically just like I'm clapping two chalkboard erasers together over my face.
It is delicious. Don't get me wrong. But like, I'm a glazed man personally.
Yeah. So I transitioned to almost exclusively glazed now. And I've also gone away from the fillings because I have found, I can't tell if it's just when I was a kid, they might have had fruit in them, but I find that they almost never have fruit in them when they're filled with jam, quote unquote. It tends to just be like some sort of thickened syrup with
yeah, those are good. I like that.
We
want good things, not real things.
I would rather.
We're not buying donuts for their realism.
No, but I would rather actually have some fruit inside of it. You know, I don't like the goop. I don't like
go buy yourself a fruit tart or something, man. This is donut territory. It's supposed to be fruit flavored goop. Like, did you ever eat like Hostess cherry or apple pies?
Yes.
I mean, those had a little bit of fruit in them, but it was mostly just like, I don't know where this thick goop comes from.
They did not have a little bit of fruit in them. They had like the sawdust chippings of fruit. They were not fruit.
Well, that was not the feature. The feature was the goop, and then the fruit was basically there to try and add a little bit of authenticity to it to some people who are not very bright. But like the goop is the good part.
Yeah, no, but see, that's the thing, though, is that, like, as an adult, I find that just straight sugar doesn't do it for me,
no.
Or straight high fructose corn syrup in some cases. And so I usually go for the old-fashioned donuts these days. And
yeah, those are tasty.
Maple glazed.
Maple is the best. Is maple not the best flavor? I mean, you see how, like, regular glazed is good. I find very little interest in like a chocolate frosted donut. Like it's got to be maple frosted or glazed, pretty much for me.
Yeah, chocolate doesn't do it for me usually because it's the kind of chocolate that doesn't taste like much most of the time if a donut shop is using it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Blue Star, for example, actually has, I believe it is called a Mexican hot chocolate donut that I've had, which is I think a chocolate cake donut where the cake itself is actually chocolate, and there's also like a chocolate glaze on top of it, and it packs a punch, but it also has a weird off-putting spice note to it that I don't actually enjoy.
Have you ever had the Abuelita's Mexican hot chocolate you can buy in the grocery store?
No.
It's good. It's got that same sort of horchata kind of cinnamony spice flavor thing going on in there.
No, this was a chili kick.
By the way, I should stipulate that I hate the taste of horchata, and Amanda actually loves it.
I'm not sure if I've ever had horchata.
It's like it's like a pepperminty kind of thing.
Yeah, no, maybe.
No, I'm not a fan.
Someday, but
it's like you're drinking a bucket of white sangria, basically.
Okay, most of the time, donut shops don't actually use high quality chocolate, and you wind up with something that's kind of like brown, but doesn't have a lot of like. Oomph.
It's like watered down Nutella or something.
Yeah, it doesn't have flavor to it, and so I usually pass over on that. And then there's like the vanilla one, but I usually find that it doesn't really taste like much of anything. And then there's your plain glazed, which again doesn't taste like much of anything to me. And I would much rather have the maple because it's got some spunk. To it. So I enjoy that.
You sure that's the adjective you want to go with?
It's absolutely the one that I'm going to stick with. but so, yeah, I went to all the talk of donuts that you were experiencing drove me to well, it didn't drive me. I drove me. But I went to Primo's and I had a maple glazed old fashioned this morning.
Oh, look at that.
It was absolutely delicious.
Look at that. That donut synergy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
where's Primo's?
That's on Sawtell and National, which is basically next to the 405, right around where the TrueCar building is. Are you familiar with that location?
You'll be shocked to hear that no, I am not familiar with the TrueCar building.
anyway, it doesn't matter. There are no sights to see there. It's Mar Vista. And so
405 and like what city?
National.
I don't know National.
National's a street.
Yeah, I know. I don't know where that is.
Well, it's north of Venice, south of Olympic.
Oh, okay, I can do that. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know where. Yeah, never mind. I know where that is.
Yeah. And so they've been operating since like I think the 1950s. It is very old fashioned, no frills, cheap as dirt. Like I think it was like $1.18 or something for my donut.
Mm-hmm.
Compare that with Blue Star, it was absolutely delicious. And I only had the one because you know, of course. Now, what are your opinions on the buttermilk logs? I don't like them. I find them to be basically like little bread loaves, and I don't need all of that.
Buttermilk logs.
Have you ever seen those? Maybe it's just an LA thing, because I don't remember seeing them in Tampa.
I'm not sure I'm familiar with what you're referring to as a buttermilk log.
It is basically an old-fashioned dough, but in a bar shape, and then fry it, and it comes out looking like a little pound cake.
Buttermilk log donuts. Let's see what I can find. Oh! It looks like somebody turned a log donut into like a bear claw almost.
Yeah, because all the little craggliness from the old-fashioned buttermilk dough.
No, I'm not familiar with this, but it doesn't look appealing.
No, well, see, the problem is it's too much. Like, the old-fashioned is just the right amount of a donut, and then you're done. And with this thing, it's like 2 to 3 donuts put together into one gigantic pound cake that you're eating, and I just can't do that. I cannot muster that in me.
Yeah, the Blue Star donut was relatively large, especially when you compare it to one of the old-fashioned ones, because those are typically a little bit smaller. But I think Voodoo is just in like full-blown tourist donut mode, because their Homer Simpson donut, which was the canonical round donut shape with the pink on top, was just like a 1.2x size donut. So it was just like even larger. And it's just, if the donuts were smaller, I would still buy just as many of them. And I don't even care if they cost the same. Just like, don't give me that much donut. I don't need that much donut in my life. It's going to hurt.
See, it just makes you feel terrible. Now, I have to say, in the world of small donuts, there is the world of small donuts. In the world of small donuts, there's also a donut friend, which is over in Highland Park. Our friend of the show, Rye Amadamadinion, he had recommended the place to me as a friend who likes donuts. He recommended donut friend, and they have a curious selection of things where. They make these weird donut sandwiches, which I completely took a pass on. And then they also have these other ones where...
Do they do donut burgers?
No. It's basically a donut, and then you like build the inside of it with fruit and whipped cream and stuff like it was a pink berry thing, and then you put top half of it on. Yeah, no. I don't want that. That's not the donut that I desire. But then they also had a whole cabinet of like actual donuts, and they had like an orange blossom lavender one or whatever it was, and it was just like...
Is this place in Echo Park?
Highland Park.
Oh, basically. Okay, so exactly.
Exactly the same thing.
Look at the lavender donut for the love of...
It was just... Okay, lavender's dangerous. A lot of people can go overboard in lavender and then you're eating soap. But if you put just the right amount, it can give it a nice little accent. Floral accents.
I don't want a floral accent. Like, I don't like floral things.
You just think you don't like floral... You just think you don't like floral things, but you don't know. You don't know until you try it.
Things described as floral coffees, and I don't enjoy those.
I've never had a floral coffee. That sounds terrible. Because it doesn't seem like that would mesh well with the other flavor notes of coffee.
No, it tasted like coffee and tea mixed together, which was not super great.
Oh, weird.
But have you ever had a donut sandwich in the actual sense of a sandwich?
Oh God, no. I've seen the what was it, like the Google cafeteria thing that made the rounds, where it was a glazed donut cut in half with like burger patties and cheese and stuff inside of it.
Yeah, that's a thing that they do. When we lived in San Jose, there was a food truck that stopped outside of this muffler shop that had this like 30-foot tall terrifying guy who looked like what's the guy with Paul Bunyan holding a muffler. Anyway, it was called like the donut truck or the dough truck or some stupid pun thing, but they had the donut burgers where it was not a donut cut in half. It was two glazed donuts with, I think, like, you know, like a In-N-Out double inside. And it looked really good, but we didn't get that one. We got a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but with donuts for the bun. And that's another one of those things. It was delicious, but then like 3 bites in, you're like, this is too much sugar. I'm going to die, and I'm going to lay down here on the curb. And then I'm just never going to wake up again.
Yeah, see, I think that's one of those problems that most people don't take into account with donuts. And I'm surprised that the people making the donuts also don't sort of think about that a little bit, since they're making so many of them. And they're like, you know... Maybe this is enough sugar to kill a man. we should dial it back. Just a scotch. It doesn't seem to cross many people's minds. One of the ones that I think exercises some restraint is, of course, downtown, the Cafe Dolce, where they have the green tea donuts, which unfortunately you've never been able to have on the many trips that you've made.
Rub it in my face, why don't you?
Yeah, they have a terrible Fruity Pebble one also.
God, just the fruity cereals, they just need to die.
Yeah,
I have some commentary on cereals after this.
Okay, and they also have the bacon one. I just don't care for bacon in desserts, but that's personal preference. I know that it's a favorite of yours, so maybe you do like that one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Although Animal has a bacon chocolate dessert that I found quite a turnoff, because it was like a chocolate bar, like they made it into like a like the shape of like a Three Musketeers, but it was like that really sort of like dry dark chocolate that has no sweetness whatsoever, and then they put bacon on it. It was like no.
Weird.
Yeah. Have you been to Animal? I forget.
No.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, no, there's a line of chocolates V-O-S-G-E-S. I think it's Vosges. And they have a chocolate bar that has bacon inside of the chocolate bar. I also don't like that either. I think it might just be not in the cards for me to go with bacon and desserts. But they're, because, you know, that's one of those things that they're apparently like famous for and everybody loves. And it's just like, nope. I've tried it there. I've tried donuts. I tried it as a crumble on top of some chocolate torte dessert thing another time.
But like you've tried it over like a maple frosted donut.
I can't remember if the Cafe Dolce one is maple frosted or not.
But you know, like the old school, they're usually like log shaped maple frosted.
Yeah, the bars.
Put a piece of bacon on it. Yeah. Like that's what the Voodoo Donut basically was. Like it was nothing special, but it was tasty.
Yeah, they don't mesh for me. They don't do it for me. But I respect that it's a thing for people.
Well, there has to be a solid amount of maple frosting to sort of combat the saltiness. But I think it's a good combo when used judiciously. And I'm just a fan of bacon in general, personally. As noted, if you've ever seen what I look like in person.
Well, what is it Guy Fieri would say? This is a body made by bacon.
Yeah, exactly. by insert whatever the person's making right there. I mean, don't literally insert it because that would be weird.
No, that'd be the next level for the Triple D show. Anyway, Guy Fieri.
So cereal.
Tell me this anecdote, this marvelous.
It's not particularly an anecdote in as much as that I'm aware that it is apparently, and it doesn't matter now since it's over, an XOXO tradition to they have this like building which is an old school or whatever that has like an auditorium where they do all their presentations and stuff. But outside there's a big fenced off area full of tables for people to hang out or whatever with umbrellas and junk. And they've got an open bar there with, you know, just free beer. It's, you know, Portland beer. It's all weird and stuff. Most of the stuff was like espresso flavored beer that I drank or some intolerable IPA, or they had these like weird strawberry ciders. Anyway, but they also have food trucks there, and there's a variety of odd ones, but the most popular one seems to be, it's basically a Volkswagen Vanagon, so not like the actual van, but like the goofy little van that Volkswagen made. And they have like 400 different types of just cereal, and you can get all the different milks you want. And there is a lovely gentleman and a lady that work there, and they wear onesie pajamas inside there. And they will sell you a bowl of cereal for $5. And you can mix and match, too. You can get all kinds of weird flavors and stuff. And you can even go off menu, which is apparently what you have to do. That's what our friend of the show, Matt Alexander, does. He goes off menu and orders something referred to as the apple pie, which is Apple Jacks and Cinnamon Toast Crunch mix. And apparently it's very popular. Amanda got a mix of Cookie Crisp and apparently at some point in existence Cinnabon made a Cinnabon cereal, which just has like things that look like little tiny Cinnabons, and you mix them together, and it was kind of apparently tasty because I didn't really take more than like a half bite of it. But this is the thing. They also had, they gave me a small sample out of like a little tiny Dixie cup of, I have to look it up. It's called Waffle something. And they're like little shaped like waffles, and they have a flavor like maple syrup, and they were delightful. And if I ate cereal, my love of waffles would probably drive me to them. They were called Waffle Crisp. Oh, of course. Anyway, they are
breakfast cereal.
They are wonderful. You know, I couldn't eat more than like three of them or whatever. But
would you say they were waffleful?
That's not a word, so I probably wouldn't say that. But that's the thing, apparently. So that's the XOXO tradition. And I think basically every night, Matt and a fair amount of the other folks standing around in the circle in the lumpy grass field went and had cereal out of a van from people in onesies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cereal doesn't do it for me on any level.
I don't eat cereal at home, like as an adult at all.
No. Even when I was a kid, I never really liked cereal very much. And the kinds that I liked were actually the boring adult cereals, like Honey Nut Clusters and what was it? The almond? God, what was the name of it? It was the one with like a big circular ring on the box, and it was like almond flakes and stuff all glued together with sugar.
Honey Bunches of Oats.
Yeah, that's the one. There was Honey Bunches of Oats that had like an almond version of it. And so I would gravitate towards those, the ones that, you know, weren't like kid centric, with the puffed corn and rice and stuff that were flavored with chocolate or fruit, quote unquote. And my brother would always have the chocolate ones, like the Cocoa Crisps and the Cookie Crisp stuff, which I just found revolting. I really did not like the taste of the chocolate cocoa powder stuff milk.
Oh, not particularly.
That would come out of that. I did, for a brief period of time, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch because of the overwhelming cinnamon notes in it.
Yeah.
But
did you ever try French Toast Crunch when they came out with that for a while?
I did. I did not like it as much.
Yeah, it wasn't as good, but Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I was a big fan of that as well. But, I did, to a certain extent, I don't know how much of it was being steered by my parents, but for a while, I did steer towards some of the less sugary ones. But to this day, I'm still kind of a fan of Wheaties. Like, I mean, it's basically like eating carpet or whatever. Like, it's not...
It's you want to say that again?
No, I mean, like, literally fibrous flooring.
Okay.
See, the longer we pause here, the longer people are going to have to ruminate on
it. No one should ruminate on that. Like, my mom would always buy us the most boring stuff, which was, like, a honey...
Cheerios. Regular Cheerios?
Honey Nut Cheerios, not regular Cheerios. Mercifully, she did not inflict those upon us. But there were the multigrain.
That's exactly where I was going. Multigrain Cheerios, they would come out like when the Olympics were around or whatever in the purple box. Those things are the worst.
Yeah, it's basically like you're eating the box.
You might as well, yeah. Anyway, cereal. You can make a living, apparently, if you've got an iPad with Square on it and like a bunch of boxes of cereal in a van.
Yeah. There's a place down in Venice here.
It's in Venice.
Of course. I mean, this is just the worst elements of human society are in Venice. And they sell cereal. They're called Cereal. That is the name of it. It is a bit of a coffee bar shop thing with bowls of cereal you can buy. Nothing particularly noteworthy about it. They also apparently have, like, other things. I don't go there. I went there one time, and I had a coffee, and I saw people having cereal, and I was just like, you're grown adults. Get your ish together.
You don't really want to be seen in public eating cereal, but I did find it amusing that apparently their business model is so effective that they offer anyone that wants it a free refill, but of course nobody ever takes them up on it because it's a relatively sizable bowl of cereal with, you know, soy milk or whatever you decide to put in there, whatever. By the way, I think, was it there or was it on the internet or something, but Brian Hamilton was arguing that you're supposed to put whole milk in stuff? Like, that's just... That's terrible.
Oh, I didn't see any of that, so maybe that was in person, but...
Goodness, God, whole milk, like, come on, and cereal, that would just be like eating frozen yogurt with cereal in it.
Here's the thing. Whole milk serves a purpose in society in certain cases.
Other liquids?
Yeah, and being used in recipes and stuff, like, but I don't want to drink a glass of it so much. I don't find it as repulsive as some people do, but my mom would always buy 2%, and whole milk is what, 3.5 or something percent milk fat.
I didn't know if there was actually a percentage associated with it. If it's only 3.5, that's actually kind of surprising.
Well, see, the thing is that percentage makes a huge difference, because if you go from 2% to 1%, you're just like, oh, this changed a lot. And then
what is skim then, like half?
Zero.
It's literally zero.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you just go down those tiny little steps on that scale there, it's a pretty big difference between the different kinds. And he would always have 2% when we were growing up, and I am sort of used to that, but then I have found out I was not really somebody who should be drinking milk very much as an adult, and so I switched over to only occasionally having the lactate brand, lactose free milk.
Are you full lactose?
No, for some reason cheese and yogurt and stuff is all kosher, but just milk,
not being meat.
Yeah,
cheese.
That was a joke. But yeah, like, things that have dairy in them are usually okay. It's just usually the milk thing that does it for me. I know there are many people who can't even like have, you know, ice cream or cheese of any kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm fortunate enough that I'm okay. But that's another reason why I usually shy away from giant bowls of cereal and milk. Because I also find that the lactose-free ones are incredibly sweet because they have converted the lactic acid into a sugar by processes, and that results in it being sweeter.
Hmm.
It's like sweet white water.
Sweet Wetwater. Mm-hmm. I think that's Michael Phelps' nickname.
Okay. So anyway, we should probably stop talking to one another now for at least a week. I think we're good.
You gonna distance ourselves for a little while?
Yeah, just lay low.
Okay. I can do that. I'm capable of laying low.
Okay.
At least on podcasts, not on the internet.
Mm-mm. No.
Addicted to the internet.
Everybody's addicted to the internet.
It's great. It's addictive.
There are literally cases of internet addiction, and I don't mean to make light of them, because I'm not actually literally addicted. I just need to check it all the time, every couple seconds. Somebody probably said something on there right now, because I've been on this podcast and I haven't been able to check it.
I'm not checking my Twitter phase right now.
Me neither. I'm totally not doing it right now. totally not. Oh my God, look at all those no, I didn't see any notifications. Nothing. There's nothing.
Okay. Oh, what a great way to conclude the regular portion of this episode.
This episode was a mess.
This episode was brought to you by
donuts and the iPhone 7.
Oh yeah.
And great. Cereal.
Send us a free review model.
Send us a free review donut.
We will review your donut live on this show.
Not a euphemism.
This is an open offer to, like, this is legitimate donut makers only. Don't, like, just random people start sending us donuts. If you are a donut maker and you send us a donut, we will review it live on the show.
Yeah, don't send us boxes of Entenmann's. Don't send us...
Oh, and that's not even a donut.
Yeah, don't send us Dunkin' Donuts. Don't send us Krispy Kreme. Don't send us any of that garbage.
Well, I'll take Krispy Kreme.
Now, see, when we were talking about Ray's Donuts, I forgot to mention that I find that, for some reason... Krispy Kreme seems to be entirely air, and you bite into it and you have nothing.
That's why you would buy a dozen of them, because you would be able to just inhale them.
Yeah, because they are just a vehicle for glaze. That is all they are.
It's fine. So is my body.
This is a body made by glaze. No.